coming up in the podcast. And instead of just being constantly in my head and sort of taking out and putting back in scenes, I should have just said to myself, just write the next line and just did it line by line like that. But I just didn't do it that way. I am a chronic overthinker. No one's ever accused me of underthinking something. It never happens. Welcome to Amelia's Behind the Scenes Author Diary, an exclusive look at the behind-the-scenes misadventures of the 40-something mystery author. Discover how close she is to releasing her latest novel, hear exciting details about upcoming writing projects, and discover lessons she has learned along her writing journey so you don't have to make the same mistakes. You can find episode show notes and lots more information at authorpreneurpodcast.com/podcast. Hello, writers. I'm back again. And yes, it's been a little over 16 weeks since I released an episode of the podcast. Between now and November, I took December and January off deliberately because it's a busy time of year and I tend to travel during these periods. When I got back from vacation at the end of January, I had caught the flu from a family function, and this also affected the final week of my vacation. So I spent a few weeks with family. I think I spent a week on a personal vacation. I then spent a week with family, and then I had another week that was purely vacation. So it was a little over 3 weeks, and ironically, I came back with the flu. So I guess it's a case of take a stab in the dark as to who didn't get the flu vaccine. But I was out of action for that final week of the vacation. It sort of destroyed, I guess, the fun that I was planning on having. I did go around wearing a mask. I didn't just spread this all over Paris and Chessie. Yeah, so I was out of action for that week and then the next 3 weeks. And then I wanted to wait until I got my voice back completely before I started podcasting, before I continued podcasting again, because I kept losing my voice. And it took me a while to get through the layers of mucus and the sore throat. Like, it wasn't a case I couldn't just take Vocal Zone before podcasting and it would help my voice. This was just, it really was the flu, like for me anyway. Sometimes I'll say, look, I had the flu, and what I really had was, you know, I had a cold, but this time it was the full-blown flu because I had a few days where I was lying in a hotel room at night at Disneyland Paris. And I was sweating. I had a fever. And then the next night I just felt really cold, like unusually cold. So I had like a fever for a couple of days. And that is a hallmark of, that is a symptom of the flu. So I was like, wow, I really do have the flu. Like it was quite serious. And the mucus hung around for a while. And I also injured myself while I was on holidays. And that injury took a long time to heal because my body was battling with influenza. So yeah, that was fun. Not really, I don't recommend it. But yeah, so I was out of action and I wanted to wait because it just sounded like if I did recorded an episode of the podcast during that time, it just sounded like the Grim Reaper was recording a podcast episode talking about, you know, the latest book it was writing. It just did not sound good. And I just thought, I can't subject people to this. It's just not right. So I just decided to wait. In this episode, I look back on 2023 and the first few months of 2024, and I discuss the highs and lows within sort of my personal writing journey. On top of this, I share the products and courses that I recommend and are still using in my writing and self-publishing business. And I sort of look back at, you know, 2023 and sort of look at what I used, like legitimately used, and sort of consider, will I continue using these things this year? And there are things that I do use every day that I wish I could use something else, but I can't. So it's just, I have to keep using it, and I will talk about what they are. But without further ado, let's get into the episode. Just to let you know, this episode was recorded on the 14th of March. So this show is primarily me looking back at 2023 and the first months of 2024. If you're interested in reading the transcript or would like links to anything that I've mentioned in the show, check out the very long blog post or edited transcript at authorpreneurpodcast.com/BTS057. And if you're new to this podcast, I want to say a huge thank you for stopping by and trying out my show. To those of you who've been faithfully listening, thank you for listening in and supporting me. Your support means more to me than you know. I will point out that in this episode, I will be mentioning products like I just mentioned, and some of those will actually have affiliate links. But over in the show notes and on the blog post, I will show you what links are actually affiliate links, and they'll have like a star next to it, just, you know, for the extra layer of transparency. For me, 2023 was riddled with a health issue that will not end in surgery, and I have mixed feelings about this. I was originally, it sounds creepy, but I was originally looking forward to having the surgery, even though I would probably end up with a massive scar on my body, because I thought, you know, there was light at the end of the tunnel, but it hasn't worked out that way. So I'm just going to have to keep going and push on despite these health issues. And I think this is a problem with the way medicine still treats women. And it's just like my pain and discomfort isn't, I feel like it's not being treated seriously. So yeah, and that's where I'm going to leave it, because I feel like I'm going to get emotional, and it's just, I don't want this podcast to be about that. In saying that, I spent 12% more hours writing in 2023 than the previous year. These extra hours resulted in me writing an extra 25,000 words than compared to 2022. And that's essentially a novella. But I only published one novella length story, which was The Locked Room, in April. And I started writing James Lalonde Book 3 and A Short Cozy Mystery. Once again, I'm thankful for my detailed spreadsheet, which enabled me to keep track of my writing progress in both hours and word count, because it's helped me put 2023 in perspective. Without these statistics, I would have just thought that I achieved less in 2023 than the previous year, because I only published one book, whereas in 2022, I published two. And I think that's the danger in sort of measuring your, whether you've had a successful year based on how much you've produced and put out into the world. Like, I'm obviously disregarding podcasts, blog posts and stuff like that. And I'm just focusing on, well, I only published one book. And I think this is a bit ridiculous, because there's a part of me that I didn't realize was doing this, but I must be comparing myself to other people. And I know better than to do that. It's something I'm still doing. And it's ridiculous for me to sort of look, say, well, I've achieved less because of that one book, whereas I've actually written more in both hours and word counts. The other thing is I've also changed the way that I write. So these extra hours that I've put in, all these extra words that I've put in, there's a high chance that these words are going to end up in the final book. Well, they'll make it to my editor, whether or not my editors will point out that, hey, you might need to change these things, but the majority of what's there will probably end up in the final published story. So I'm being really hard on myself. And I think it's because there's a part of me, quite stupidly, that's comparing myself to, you know, a seasoned writer who's writing well into his 80s, that's published hundreds and hundreds of books. And because I've just changed the way that I've written, it's going to take me a while to get into a stride where I can write at a reasonable pace and publish more books with this method. I think I just need a little bit more experience writing into the dark, but I'm just being too hard on myself. And that's something I do in all areas of my life. To be quite frank, it makes sense that I'm also doing this in my writing life as well. But I wanted to share that because I was hoping that you would sort of consider whether you're doing this to yourself as well, and maybe cut yourself a break, like I really should. After the positive reviews I received from Duplicity, I now realize that I got a serious case of stage fright and just overthought everything. On top of that, I decided to embrace writing into the dark as my method of writing instead of heavily outlining, because I had such a positive experience writing The Locked Room into the dark. However, due to my stage fright, like I said, I overthought everything and I struggled to write book three. And instead of just being constantly in my head and sort of taking out and putting back in scenes, I should have just said to myself, just write the next line, and just did it line by line like that. But I just didn't do it that way. I am a chronic overthinker. No one's ever accused me of underthinking something. It's never happens, but you get it. So while I continued to overthink this third book, I started writing a short cozy mystery, which was supposed to be a short story, but is now well into the novelette territory and is heading into novella length. And I sort of know, because I'm writing Into the Dark, I don't actually know how long the book is going to be. And this is something that I'm really hung up on. Like, for some reason, it's causing me a lot of anxiety, even though it doesn't matter. I just need to, you know, keep writing, but instead I'm obsessing over these things that I just need to let go of. And the reason why I know it's probably going to be a novella is I know where I am in the story because I'm familiar with the genre I write in now. And I know these things now need to happen in order to bring the story to a close. I sort of know that while I don't know the exact word count, I do know it's going to be a novella. It's not going to be a novel. And again, like, I was hoping to create a short story series to work on in between James and Lon, because I don't want to put all my eggs in that basket, but it just hasn't worked out like that. At the start of 2024, I decided it was time to write a new reader magnet, so I've placed those two projects on hold, and I'm currently writing that story, which is no longer a novelette. I mean, you're probably sensing a theme here. I'm starting to think I'm not capable of writing anything short. The thought process behind this was I don't want to finish writing book three and not have a new reader magnet to point readers to at the end of the story. Also, the quality of my writing has improved since I wrote The Lawn, and I want to show my readers just that. In saying that, The Lawn was never supposed to be a reader magnet, but an end of book reward for the readers of Suspicion, because it's the story of an event that is referred to in that book. Essentially, it's probably an Easter egg. Over time, I started incorrectly using it as a reader magnet, and it needs to stop because it's not a proper murder mystery. Like, you need to have read Suspicion and wondered, oh, I wonder what happened there, because James technically doesn't remember this because he's got a concussion. This entire sort of moment is missing in his mind. So this is what this is. So on top of this, I'm considering taking this book off sale on Amazon and all the other stores and just having it as that bonus and having a separate reader magnet. And the other thing that's making me do this is I want to think long term. I don't want to be too short term about my writing, because I'm about to have, because after I finish publishing James Lon book three, I'm going to have five full length books, because at the moment I have sort of four novellas and novels and one short story, and I'm about to have three books in a series, a standalone novella and another sort of novella that's a part, that's the start of a series. And I'm going to have like a mini sort of backlist for the James and Lon series. So I'm considering starting to actively promote the series, the first in series book, and I need to have all these elements in place, if that makes sense. As I'm pausing the writing of my new reader magnet to write the script for this episode, I'm starting to panic about the placement of the body in the murder mystery. As I approach the 13,000 word mark, the victim has been murdered and the body is about to be discovered. All the reader has to do is turn the page. In saying that, I'm writing one of those stories where you need to meet the suspects and the victim before the crime is committed, so the reader is not relying on secondhand information to figure out the whodunit. Plus, it's a short read. I'm laying clues beforehand that hint that something is about to go wrong any minute, but I won't know whether the story works until the book is finished. That's the thing with writing Into the Dark. It's a process where there are a lot of unknowns. So essentially, I could be panicking about nothing, which is a trend for me of late and is something I really need to stop doing because it's not serving me. On a side note, I finally come up with the title for the story, The Wedding Party. As of the beginning of March, the story reached 22,343 words. I decided to enlist the help of a beta reader before I finished the story because I was certain that parts of my novella were boring or were dragging the story down because of the placement of the body. And I wanted to see how readers would react to the story so far. So I hired a beta reader on Fiverr, thinking I was going to get the reader's first impressions as inline comments. But what I got was a one-page report. Sure, I only paid less than £24, but I didn't get the inline comments that I wanted. After questioning the gap between what was promised in the gig and what I got, the manuscript with the inline comments magically appeared. And the comments weren't particularly helpful. Generally, mystery readers will look for clues and try and figure out the whodunit before the sleuth. They want to see if they can do that. Obviously, if they can do that, they're disappointed because they want a twist at the end, but they also, at the end, they also want to see the people who do the bad things in the story be brought to justice. This is the mystery reader. So when I got her comments back, I noticed that she didn't behave in this way and that she tried to steer the story out of genre. In saying that, the reader did say the pacing was off from chapters 6 to 8, and then they dived into another comment which was solely fixated on the chapter timestamps, where at the start of the chapter I'll say, you know, it's this hour and minute, and she's saying the pacing was off, and then she immediately fixated on these chapters timestamps. But as I went through and I looked at the three comments she made from chapters 6, 7, and 8, this person didn't point out where the pacing was off. So I don't think she was talking about pacing. I think she was doubting whether these things could happen within this time frame. And they can, because I'm one of those annoying people who I went on Google Maps or I did the calculations. I said, this conversation should take X minutes to happen in real life. He then needs to go here from where he is to this in the rain will take this amount of time. Then he has another conversation with somebody. Then he returns to this other thing. They have another conversation and every minute is accounted for. And I've spent a long time figuring out the time, and these timestamps aren't important. But again, this reader isn't commenting on what's actually happening. I feel like I wasted 7 days waiting for feedback that wasn't useful. And I didn't want to continue the conversation on with this reader. I just wanted to end the experience and move on and realize, you know, that was a £24 lesson. So I went back, actually, before I talk about what I did next. When I hire beta readers, I don't like to point out issues that I think exist in the story because I realize that sometimes these quote-unquote issues aren't issues, but it's me looking at my manuscript through my own insecurities. For instance, I thought my story was dragging because I was concerned that there were 13,000 words between the start of the story and where the body appears on the page. I'll figure out how many pages that is for you. So it's about 50. On page 55, there's a body. James discovers the body. It's around page 55, 56, 57, somewhere on those pages, depending on how the story is broken up in the way it's formatting. That's when the body is on the page. And I'm really fixated on that because I don't know how long the story is going to be. So this might not be an issue for the reader, but it's an issue for me. And what happens is when you're beta reading, if you point out that I think I'm having issues here, or I think this is dragging, and you tell them that this is a problem, they will zoom in on this and they will pick it to death. And what you won't get like an authentic response. You'll get like this zone of sort of criticism, and the reader actually thinks, the beta reader thinks they're being helpful by doing this. But if you don't tell them and just give your story to someone who reads in the genre, and this is really important that they read in the genre, you should get a better beta reading experience. And I have found someone on Fiverr I really like because he does this. He does leave those sort of quirky, sort of funny comments. He will leave those LOL comments, but he will also try and figure out who did it, who committed the crime. And this guy that I usually use off late, every time I sort of look on Fiverr, he's booked out. And there's a reason he's booked out, because he's good at what he does. And the information he provides is useful. So I got in touch and I asked him if he had time in his schedule to read my story. And for another £39, I got a 7-page report and a ton of inline comments. So I got about 3 per page And I think I'll just go check how many pages there are in the manuscript. Ironically, I got this filed under short stories. It's a joke of the day, isn't it? Even if he's sort of saying LOL to something, that tells me that the joke that I've set up in the manuscript is actually funny, because I do inject humor into my manuscript, but it's more situational humor or James commenting on or seeing something as funny. So there's 86 pages. I'm just going to close that and hopefully not close my recording. Yay. This time I removed the chapter timestamps and he didn't have the same pacing issues. He had pointers about James's reaction to certain things and I needed things to be more emotional. And he made other points to sort of strengthen certain characters. And he also pointed out that some of the background characters that I created were also quite funny, seemed very real and funny for him. And I was quite happy. He had just a very different reading experience. And now I'm left wondering whether I should hire another beta reader to see if someone else has this issue with pacing. However, I don't like to hire too many readers because at one stage I'll start writing by committee. And if I do that, no one will be happy because it's not possible to please every one of those committee members. And I know when I have too many opinions on my work, it can be difficult to drown out these voices so then I can continue being creative and to continue writing. But what I will say is if you are thinking about hiring a beta reader, I'd be very cautious about who you hire, because some people will actually show their work, what they've done for past people, and you get to see their inline comments. But the thing that I have with beta readers is I generally use them because I want to know how people are going to react to my story and whether they're having the reaction I want them to have, because that tells me whether I'm doing my job well or not. Let me know if you do want me to maybe create an episode on, how am I going to put this, what to look for when hiring paid beta readers. And so if you want me to give you tips on what to look for when hiring beta readers, not necessarily on Fiverr, but just in general, let me know and I'll create that episode for you. If you're not familiar with my impulse buy marketing strategy, please check out episode BTS055. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. For the sake of placing everyone on the same page, my first book, Suspicion, was set to free on all ebook stores, and Duplicity, which was book two, was set to 99 cents. I did this as an attempt to encourage readers to download book one and buy book two. During the 3-month experiment, I noticed that 2% of readers who downloaded book one went on to buy book two. So what happened after that 3-month experiment? 2% of readers who downloaded book one went on to buy book two at 99 cents for the rest of the year, and it didn't change. And also, I think it's worth pointing out, I didn't actually create ads and send traffic to the free thing. It was just, if it was on free, what would happen? Now that I've had a chance to reflect on this experience, there's something I need to share with you. All I did in this experiment was train readers to buy my books at no or low cost. I wasn't finding an audience. I was focused on the vanity metric of volume. But in a nutshell, I don't want to write for the free market. It's not an effective marketing strategy. And I want to focus on finding the right audience for my books and not getting my book in front of as many people as possible, because I don't want just anyone to read and review my book. I want the right audience to read and review my book. I've now learned that and I feel like it's a very valuable lesson. So at the end of 2023, I switched back to full price to start a new experiment in 2024. And in February of 2024, I removed the leave a review page at the back of my ebooks because the stores will prompt the reader to leave a review anyway. And that's not, leaving a review isn't really what I want readers to do. I want them to buy the next book after they read Suspicion. I'd rather have them buy the next book than leave a review. If you've heard something in this episode that was helpful to you and you'd like to support the show, then buy me a coffee for as little as $2 at buymeacoffee.com/author-ADHay. I will say I'm not 100% sure how long this episode is going to go for, because I record this in parts, but I have a funny feeling I've gone off script. Well, I know I've gone off script. And I've rambled a bit too much, so it's going to be longer than what I'd expected. So I might actually divide this up into two parts. So this next section may be in a separate episode, and I'll release these back to back. Hopefully that makes sense. And now it's time for me to talk about the products that I've used and loved in 2023 and am using in 2024. So I still use Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign. I use Photoshop and Illustrator more than InDesign, but I am starting to get into, using InDesign as a part of my business. And they're all a part of the Creative Suite. And the Creative Suite have changed the price of the Creative Suite for me. Originally, I had it at a steal and it was like $30-something. And now I have a spreadsheet. I guess you didn't see that one coming. I always have a spreadsheet. Yeah, so the Creative Suite did at one stage, I got the entire Creative Suite for £31 per month for a year. And then it changed to a scandalous $54.29 for the entire Creative Suite. And I've just had to swallow that cost. It's huge change in price. But when I changed from just the Photoshop, because I just had Photoshop and Lightroom together. And when I changed from that to the entire suite, I got that £31 a month. And I didn't realize I was getting a deal. They didn't explain to me that they were then going to start charging me $54 after that first year. That was super sneaky. And I thought I was getting a deal. And in reality, they were kind of ripping me off. Well, I feel ripped off, if that makes sense. So I still use Canva. I have the Pro Canva, and I use Canva to create watermarked low-res images that I upload to my website and other places because I'm trying to discourage theft of the pre-made book covers and custom covers that I create on my website. In saying that, I use Deposit Stock Photos, iStock, and Vector Stock, and I use these for Le Villain book covers. And this is where I find the images because I only use paid images. I don't use images from free sites. Like, you can't just because you find an image on Google doesn't mean you can use it, and you should not use it because that's theft. Even if you go back to them and then ask it, and also you can't alter the images you find on Google. You don't have those permissions. When you go to a stock image site, you are purchasing a license to use it, and that license actually grants you permission to make alterations and layer the photos and stuff like that. It's really important. I'm still using Etsy. I'm debating whether I want to keep using Etsy as a freelancer because sometimes, I get a lot of spam on Etsy, people trying to scam me out of money, and it's comical. And I also get people, some of my customers, not all of them, because I do say no to a lot of people, because especially if some people treat me terribly. I have tried using ChatGPT, and I talk to ChatGPT with more kindness and respect than some people, real people out there on the internet talk to me as a designer. Like, it's just comical. Or like, I've had people want a particular font, like in an ebook. And when you're sort of formatting an ebook, you can't really, I'm not going to get into the technicals, but there's no point in being really particular about the font because every e-reader or app has the ability to override the fonts. You can do that in every phone and e-reader, from the Kindle White to the Apple Kindle app. You can also do that on Google Books. I don't know what their app is called. My husband uses that. And in there, you can change the font off the e-reader. So when you say to someone who's formatting your ebook, I want this particular font, it's like, sure. But it also depends. And I don't like working with these people who want a particular font, because what they do is you'll go to the trouble of doing the formatting, you'll send it to them, and they don't realize that. They'll open their thing up and they don't understand. You have to explain to them when you sideload something onto the Kindle app, it doesn't retain all the formatting. I don't know why. It's just something that Kindle does. It's actually better to upload it into the Kindle preview to see the original formatting. And if you send it to them and baby them, they'll see and you explain all these things, they will still kick up at you and they won't follow all the instructions and they'll complain. And it's a nightmare. So I want to sort of try and keep my costs low. But sometimes I found some great customers through Etsy, and they've been amazing to work with. And I love working with these people. But then there's the, I know it's like, it's a good huge portion that want something free and cheap, and they have the whip out, and it's an unpleasant experience. Because every time I get a ding from Etsy, I'm like, oh, is this somebody who's going to treat me terribly? And you'd be surprised how many writers don't actually read an ad. Like, it's comical. I'll tell them everything they need to know, and it is a bit frustrating. But I do sort of take a deep breath, have a cup of green tea, then come back and answer them. But it's very stressful. I find working with people on a service basis very stressful. I also use Stripe. I use this both in Lavilla book covers and on my ebook store, my own Selling Direct ebook store. That's attached to my author website at author80hay.com. So I use Stripe there as well. In saying that, I use WooCommerce. That's both Lavilla book covers, and I use it with my Selling Direct site. I have a product bundles plugin that I use exclusively for WooCommerce. I don't use this with my author website because it's a paid plugin. It's really expensive, and I'm not bundling things together. I just rather create a product that has a bundle of books together and then sell it as one thing instead of pulling together a bunch of things. I also use Advanced Woo Labels. I can't remember if this is a premium plugin. I have a funny feeling it might be. I use Advanced Woo Labels for, I'm going to have to open my web browser and actually find out, because it is strange that I can't remember that whether this is, you know, a paid plugin. Okay, I'm actually using the free version for the Advanced Woo Labels, and the sold out badge for WooCommerce is free. It's a free plugin, and I use these for the villain book covers. And there's no reason why you couldn't use them with a Selling Direct store with WooCommerce either, because they're both free. I don't actually pay for them. Naturally, I use WordPress. I'm still using the Divi theme. I use over on my author website, I use the Divi Testimonial Extended plugin. I actually use it for both La Villain book covers now and author80hay.com. On author80hay.com, I use the Divi Testimonial Extended plugin to display like the best reader reviews of my books. But I will say where I got it from. It'll just say a Goodreads reader. I won't actually use their name or anything like that. But I will say where it was generated from. And they're generally my ARC readers too. They aren't usually just random readers. So over on the Authorpreneur Podcast website, I use the Divi Modules Table Maker to create tables when I'm sharing data with you. And that is a paid plugin. It was relatively cheap. I use Authorbox for Divi on all of my websites. That is free. That's a free plugin I found in WordPress. I use Gravity Forms. This is not a free plugin. It is quite expensive. I'm just going to go and have a look at my cash flow spreadsheet to figure out how much I actually pay for this. I have the Elite license because I've got a few websites, and it's $254 US a year. But the reason why I have this is I have it on all of my contact pages. I also have intake forms with the Lavillan book covers where you can fill out an extensive form and it will send it to me. This does break on occasion, and it's an absolute nightmare because I use it with my custom cover design clients because I need a lot of information from them in order to create the best possible cover for them. I need it for that, and that's how I use it. I started paying for it because the actual Divi contact form that comes with Divi, it doesn't work all the time, and the data is lost. Whereas with Gravity Forms, as long as I remember to go into Gravity Forms regularly and check that there aren't any entries that I've missed, then it's fine. And naturally, I'm still using SiteGround to host my website. I love SiteGround. I know some people haven't had particularly great experiences with them, but I don't use any form of Cloudflare with SiteGround. I'm just using SiteGround, no Cloudflare. And I think that makes a difference. I think I've had issues with Cloudflares in the past, and they have resulted in my website going down. And I did this with Blueberry because I thought it would, not Blueberry, Bluehost, because I thought it would speed up my website. But I changed to SiteGround, and it's definitely better. Now, for this podcast, I'm now hosting it with Buzzsprout after moving from Blueberry after a price increase. With Blueberry, they have some of the best analytics in the podcasting space, period. But the constant changes to these analytics, the way they're displayed, makes them sort of useless to me. I want to see an episode's growing stats over time, not just monthly. I want to be able to see it daily and monthly. But I think with Blueberry, it just locked you into monthly, and I was paying for these extra analytics too. On top of that, so I was still not getting what I wanted. There was no just upgrade, and it just got too expensive. So I changed to Buzzsprout. They only provide the basic stats, but it has a plan that makes sense too. Blueberry were pricing their stats, their plans based on megabytes, and it didn't make sense because you're uploading, like the file does have a certain megabyte, which is fine, but it's audio. So I just don't understand why they weren't pricing it based on minutes. Because after you upload the file to your podcast audio host, you then can go in and attach the metadata, which is like the file. Like right now you're listening to this, or you're watching on YouTube, usually in an app, and the app will have a square image, and that's obviously the podcast artwork. That and the show notes, the episode number, my name, links to the website, the season, all of this data you're seeing in this app is attached via the host to the audio file. And this does add megabytes, which then it does increase the size of the what is then sent to the various distribution platforms. So I'm only uploading minutes, like basically an edited file, but there's nothing attached to it yet. So I don't understand why they're charging me megabytes upon upload. And it was very confusing because I had to remember that if I had a 30-minute episode, it was usually around this many megabytes. And whereas it makes sense to charge in minutes. And also, one thing I do miss about Blueberry is it would show me how many people listened to certain percentage of the episode. I don't have that anymore. I just have like the downloads and listens are together in the same metric. They're not sort of split up the way they do with Blueberry. But Buzzsprout is easy to use. It's nice. The interface looks quite modern. It's friendly, and it's not constantly changing. They're not creating what really tipped me over the edge was Blueberry created a progressive web app, and I'm just like, and the stats were still useless. And I'm just like, focus on perfecting what you have. They originally had something great, and then they changed it to this modern look, and they took away all the features that made their stats great, like looking at it progressively over time, an episode progressively over time. Now I get like this monthly thing, and I'm just like, this isn't what I want. I want to see, you know, how many people are listening to an episode over time, usually daily throughout, you know, a series of like 3 to 6 months, because looking at your downloads immediately after you upload an episode or the next day or a week, I don't think that's valuable, because you want to be creating evergreen content that's useful over time. And I just found this really frustrating, so I left. I'm still using Earcam Live. It's what I'm using to record the video and the audio together. I use Final Cut Pro to edit the video. I've moved away from using GarageBand, which comes free on a Mac, to using Adobe Audition, which is a part of the Creative Suite. It's part of that $54 I get charged, £54 I get charged every month. I'm still using an older model Blue Yeti microphone. It's this thing. They have a definitely more of an updated podcast mic now. It's a USB. You can actually use it. I forget what the cable is called, actually. I think it's an XLR cable where you can hook it up to a little miniature sound desk, and you can sort of fade your microphone in and out. It sounds way more professional, but I can do that in Adobe Audition as well. This thing here, that I've attached to my this sort of podcast arm that you can see in the video is actually a Logitech Compass boom arm for, and it's for this model. It's not perfect, but it's better than what I had. It does add a bit of shock. So if I accidentally bump it, it's not as, it doesn't make a huge loud noise. I do have a mount that goes with this, a shock mount, but I can't use it with this microphone because it's actually for the newer models, which is a bit of a bummer. And I do plan on actually selling this and the previous microphones that I have used and buying a newer model Blue Yeti microphone. In the more author publishing side of my business, I still use BookFunnel, Vellum, Draft to Digital. I use Natural Readers. I have the premium edition of Natural Readers, and it gives you a few more voices. And there's one particular I really like, and you can only get it with the premium plan. And what I use Natural Readers to is I will upload my manuscript and I will listen to my manuscript before I start reading. And it gets me in that sort of creative zone where I'm refamiliarizing with what's happened previously in my book. And I can usually hear where I need to add more depth into the story. I'm still using Scrivener. Grammarly Premium. Grammarly Premium has done this interesting thing where it now integrates with other products quite well, and it integrates with Scrivener now, and I really like it, but I hate its beta. With the premium thing, it suggests this beta thing. It's a beta, you know, I'm going to open and show you. Actually, I can't show you because what I'm working on is actually not yet for public consumption. Oh, I can't see it. It's happening. It's not appearing. Oh, there's this sort of beta. I think it's AI, and it recommends making changes to my manuscript that just don't make any sense at all. Like, it's not good. And I'm just like, it's so frustrating. But I do like the feature, the fact that it works with Scrivener. I'm going to be honest, I haven't used Pro Writing Aid in a very long time, but I'm about to get to the stage where I'm going to start using it again. And I have the lifetime plan for that, and I don't regret buying that. I have the lifetime subscription to AutoCrit as well. And they have created a few AI features where they help you analyze the action. Going to check because I'm a bit confused. There's a couple of companies that still do this. Oh, this is ironic because I've just gone to the AutoCrit website and I saw that they're actually using Cloudflare to speed up their website with their web host, and I just saw the page and it looks really unprofessional, and it creates this lag between you typing in the web address and then loading the thing, and it says, oh, we're just checking to see if you're human, and I'm just like, what the hell? Like, and I've paid a lot of money to use this program. It's really, that's why I don't use it, because it just doesn't look professional. They've changed everything. Yeah, they have this thing where you can ask it to analyze by chapter, and then you have to sort of hit auto find chapters, and it will look for a chapter in your thing, in your manuscript, and break it up that way. In the analytics tab, they have a fiction analyzer, and this will analyze your chapters individually, and it will give you a brief synopsis of the chapter, highlight the conflict, the characters, the world building, possible contradiction events, timeline analysis, foreshadowing events, plot thread tracking, and genre analysis in every chapter. But it isn't perfect. Sometimes in the conflict, it's the possible contradiction events, it'll say things that are contradictory that actually aren't. And sometimes it'll get the conflict wrong. Like and this is definitely an AI thing, reading the manuscript, it's misunderstood something. And I'm guessing this will get better over time, and all does this by chapter, which is really nice. And they have a nonfiction analyzer as well as their usual analytical tools that you get with AutoCrit, which is why you buy it. I have purchased a set of, I think it's 21 reports that I can use now or in the future with Authors AI, which is Marlowe, and then that again analyzes your story, and it actually tells you what books that are out there that are similar to yours, but it also gives you a breakdown of how you've written the story and if you're overusing certain things, and it comes out in this very detailed report. That does take a long time to understand. You really do have to go through it and read it, and it shows you your booking compared to the books that are out there in the market. And it is interesting. I'm not sure that I would buy another 21 report because I had a for a year, or maybe it's 12 that I have. I can't remember how many reports I have left, but I had it for a certain amount of time and the reports roll over if you haven't used them, and I didn't renew it again for the next year, and I still have those reports to use. I am using PseudoWrite. PseudoWrite does this interesting thing where it will write a sort of synopsis of your story. It'll condense your story down, and I find that really interesting, and I'm sort of paying for that. I'm not really using it. Sometimes I will put my manuscript in there and it will give me sort of hints in how to sort of like expand the description, and it'll usually suggest something and I'll think, oh yeah, and it will lead me to write something different, but it'll start me off if I'm stuck. But I generally use that to edit, not write my... So technically I use it as pseudo-editor, not pseudo-write, if that makes sense. I use Booksprout still, and I use Booksprout to find ARC readers. I found a few great ARC readers through Booksprout that have since joined my list. So at some stage, I probably will stop using Booksprout because I don't really need it anymore, but I'm still using it for now. And Fiverr, of course. On, I guess, the more business end of my author business and Lavillen Book Covers and this podcast, I use these products. So I use Google Workspaces, which is basically the business email. And it's not for a lack of trying finding something new either. This really is the best product in the market. It's getting more and more expensive as the years tick on. And every year I have the same thing. I see the price rise and I get angry and I look what's out there. And then I'm reminded, oh, this is why I'm with Google. But I stay. But I'm not particularly happy because everything else out there just doesn't compare. So I use Google Workspaces. I'm still using MailerLite. I have 3 separate accounts now. I have one for Lavillen Book Covers. I have one for this podcast. So fun fact, you can subscribe and get email notifications. It's not really notifications, it'll be emails. And usually I have surveys and things like that and opportunities for you to sort of suggest things for upcoming podcasts. I'm back using Evernote. Last year, I moved away from Evernote and I moved to Notion. And Notion does this weird thing where it puts your notes in individual lines and it's a nightmare. Whereas Evernote looks and feels like a word processing tool within a note-taking app. Whereas Notion does this weird thing where each line is on a individual line, and it was really weird and it got so frustrating too when I started, because what I do is I will write the script for the podcast, I will record it, and then I'll go through and make minor changes, and then I'll copy this section by section and put it into WordPress. I don't directly type into WordPress because that's dangerous. You could lose your work and then it'll be gone forever. But with Notion, I couldn't copy it across because it stored everything as individual lines that are a thing of their own, and it copied across formatting with it, whereas with Evernote you can copy and then sort of paste special and just paste the values and it'll be fine. Whereas if I did that with Notion, I would then have to link up all the lines and turn it into a paragraph, and it was a nightmare. So I moved back to Evernote and just put up with the 50% price increase. That was extortionate, and they gave you no notice. It was just bam. The month before, you got this notice saying, you know, there's a 50% price increase. So I'm hoping I'm not going to get another 50% price increase because that's scandalous. Just be warned, they have been doing this to their, because I'm a long-term customer. I've been using Evernote since 2013 or 2012. So I've been using it for a long time. And I feel like they don't value that loyalty. So yeah, fun fact. I use Todoist every day. I'm always ticking things off. Even when I'm on holidays, I use Microsoft Office. Technically, it's just Excel that I use to outline. Even though I'm writing into the dark, I sort of create my outline as I go along. And I still do that in Excel. I create invoices. I do my cash flow and finance management in Excel as well. I probably should use an actual piece of software, but it's one more thing that I have to purchase and I don't want to. And I'm pulling my feet because I used to work in sort of finance, and I was using software for other people, usually SAP based softwares. And I don't want to have to use accounting software. I know it's dumb, but it's, yeah. unlike last year, this year I'm including a segment that's a little bit different, and that's the courses that I love and recommend. So these are only things that I personally have gone through myself and have gotten value from, and I've paid for a lot of these courses. Actually, all of these courses, I don't get any affiliate links. None of these will be affiliate links. These are just courses that I like and recommend. The first three are from WMG Publishing Lectures and Workshops. These are the workshops and lectures that Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush put out. So the first one is Writing Into the Dark. It's a classic sort of do-it-your-own-pace style workshop, and I've definitely finished this, and this is what led me to write The Locked Room Into the Dark. It sort of provided the flat platform and showed me how to do that. A lot of these, all of these workshops will have homework or assignments that you can do. The classic ones you don't submit to Dean Wesley Smith, but the ones that you do that are sort of done weekly, you do actually submit the assignments to Dean, and he will give you some feedback. The next one that I recommend is Depth in Writing. This has a set time period. The content is rolled out weekly with assignments that you need to submit to Dean for review. I'm actually 90% finished with this course. I didn't actually keep up with the weekly rollout, and I wished I did. I just chose the wrong time, and I needed to do this course, but I did kind of struggle with it. I did find it a bit tough, and I think it's because I was relatively new to writing. I do consider myself relatively new, even though I've been writing a novel since 2013. I started screenwriting in 2011, so I've been writing for a while, but I still definitely consider myself new, because it took me a long time because I wrote a few different genres before I found sort of mystery. At the time, I thought it was like a crime thriller, but I realize now I write murder mysteries. I write puzzle murder mysteries, but I still consider myself new to writing, and I did find it tough, but I definitely got a lot of value from it, and it's definitely catapulted my writing, and I'm such a better writer because of these two courses, the Writing Into the Dark and the Depth in Writing. The other workshop I've done that I really love is the Heinlein's Rules lecture. It's a classic workshop. You do it at your own pace, and following these rules is actually really tough. And he does warn you, just in saying that. And that's all of the WMG publishing lectures and workshops that I've completed. I have purchased others that I'm yet to go through, but these are the ones that I've completely finished that I recommend, if that makes sense. The fourth and final course that I recommend is it's called Jumpstart Facebook Ads for Authors by Matthew J. Holmes. This was recommended by Paul Teague on his Self-Publishing Journeys podcast. It's not too expensive. I got it at $195 US, and that was including taxes. Yeah, I think I got a bit of a discount on that. But there's a lot of social proof with that course, and I noticed that Paul got a lot of value from this course too, and I definitely trust his judgment. So I went and purchased that, and I haven't actually finished it, but there's a lot of content in it, and he does seem to know what he's talking about. So I really like it, and it's not too expensive, especially if you want to figure out how to use Facebook ads. It's not like, you know, £1,000. It's just $195. Even that is a huge amount to pay, but I think this one is definitely worth it because it's kept up with the changes to Facebook ads and the new things that you can do with that. So that's all the things that I can discuss in terms of what I achieved in 2023 and the products that I've loved and are still using in my business. If you have any questions or have tips on book marketing that you'd love to share with me, please come over to the blog post and share your thoughts in the comments section. Thanks for listening, and happy reading and writing, everybody. Thank you for listening to Amelia's Behind the Scenes Author Diary. You can find the episode show notes, back catalogue episodes, and lots more information at authorpreneurpodcast.com/podcast. I'm your host, Amelia, and I'll see you in the next Behind the Scenes Author Diary episode.